and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and I have with us tonight PMH Atwater, and we're just going to have a little free-flow discussion about something that's recently came to my attention that I feel is really important, and that's the crisis, the spiritual crisis that we're having with our children. And the thing that brought, I'll just go ahead and tell you, the thing that brought this to my attention was something that happened with my own daughter. I found out that my daughter had been molested, and I didn't know, and she started self-medicating with drugs. Not only that, but my daughter is, she's 16, just turned 17. She's spiritually conscious. She came into this world knowing. She's very psychic, like me. She understands consciousness. She understands non-duality. So she's a different kind of kid, and she doesn't really fit in, and it's been a hard road for her because she didn't have to go down the path of waking up and having life experiences to come where she is. She kind of came into the world that way. So PMH Atwater is an expert on those type things, and we decided to do a show tonight on the crisis of our new spiritual children. How are you, PMH?
I'm fine.
Thanks for coming on.
And ready to tackle this subject. I'll tell you, it's a big one, and it's not one that either of us have scripted in any way. This is free flow.
Yeah, and I found out it's not, you know, every single one of my daughter's friends, not just her friends, but the kids in general that
yeah.
go to school where we go, they're all having crises, whether it's with the substance abuse or whether it's with sex or internet addictions or inappropriate behaviors, you know, impulsive behaviors. They're all having these problems, and their parents...
They're having them right now.
Because most parents aren't spiritually aware right now. And even if they are, they don't know what to do. So we hope to
right.
help them.
Right, they don't. Well, I'd like to give just a little background here, just some stats to help us all understand or at least know... Maybe not understand, but at least know what's going on right now, because most of us don't want to hear it. So I think right now the biggest, best step we can take is just to be honest and open up our eyes. Okay, pornography is now increasing at faster rates than any other crime. Now these are stats from early January 2011. So
really?
This is right up to bat. Pornography is now increasing at faster rates than any other crime. Slavery, especially sex slavery, is the world's third largest industry.
Is
oral
it at home or somewhere else? I mean, is it in the
world?
In
everywhere.
Cities?
United States, Canada, England, China, I don't care. It's the world's largest, the world's third largest industry.
And
not shipbuilding, not farming, it's slavery.
Is this, how would we know if our child was in something that was sex slavery? Is it something, I mean, do they go out like...
Well, a lot of them are kidnapped, a lot of them are tricked, a lot of them are pulled off their lawn. Sometimes it's the guy next door that's selling your child into a prostitution, which is a form of slavery. And especially anybody from puberty on up to maybe 25... If they're traveling, if they're on vacation, they're meeting some guys or some gals, they're having some fun, next thing you know, they're either unconscious or they're slipped off into a taxi, and the next step is they usually use a syringe or a needle, shoot them full of drugs so the kids don't know what's going on, can't do anything, and from then on, they are the slave. And it's huge. I mean, the third largest industry in the world. So we're not talking about something little here. And I think it was Newsweek magazine last week, or one of the big magazines, that were having an article about, let's see, what was the name of it? Something about your neighbors. So the danger was the guy next door or the gal next door. It wasn't that your child is in the alley or going to a store or talking to someone in a car. It's your next door neighbor.
Yeah, and I have to say that's what happened to my daughter.
Yeah.
It was one of my son's friends who was in our house all the time that we thought was like a family member slipping upstairs and bothering her when everybody went to sleep.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about.
Threatened to hurt her if she told anybody.
In the case of rape, most rapists are the guy or the gal's friend or someone they know or someone the family knows. So it's not a stranger.
Yes. And what they do, I think we should say this, is what they do to deal with this, the children, they don't know what to do. They can't tell anybody because somebody's threatened them or they're scared or they're humiliated, so they self-medicate. And they become addicted.
They either self-medicate either with drugs or with alcohol.
Or cut
or they just pull into themselves and become very repressed or very quiet, very depressed.
Sorry, Pam, I just have to say before
okay.
I forget. Pay attention to your children, because my daughter made the honor roll and she swam on the swim team and went to state. I had no idea. You know, it's not always glaring you in the face, but when I look back at it now and realize how thin she was getting, then I realize that it was in front of my face and I just didn't know it.
Yeah. And so many of our children and now are being called to be parents to their parents.
Yes.
And especially the new kids, because they're so knowing, they're so intelligent, that, you know, they wind up being the parent to the parent. And they're not realizing something very important. And I hope kids are listening. If they're not, I want to yell it out anyway. The child has the power. So if you're the parent, make sure your child knows how powerful they are. If they're having problems at school, the child has the power. Go to your teacher, go to your principal, go to whomever you can trust or feel good about in your school. If you're at home, call social services, talk to a neighbor. If you feel you can trust a neighbor, go to the grocery store, go to a police officer. You have the power. The child has the power. There are now so many laws on the books that if a child speaks up, they automatically instigate all kinds of investigative authorities. They will be helped. They will be helped right away or very close to right away. Of course, there are exceptions, but in general, you know, again, the child has the power. So here's your daughter, Jessica. She's very smart. She's very knowing. She's very spiritual. But something's going on that she doesn't like, and she knows she doesn't like it. She doesn't realize she has the power. The power is in speaking up. You don't have to put up with it. And that's what these kids don't realize.
So I didn't think to let my listeners know. Tell us who you are, PMH, and where people can find you and how you know these things.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm PMH Atwater. And yes, that's really my name, just three initials, PMH, and you just slur them together and they sound like a name because it is a name. It's my name, PMH Atwater, and yes, that really is my name. It's not a pseudonym at all. You can get on my website, pmhatwater.com. Most people associate me with near-death experiences, transformations of consciousness, things that are spiritual. I'm also a prayer chaplain. I was one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies, began my work in 1978. There are soon to be 10 books out now on my findings. I say soon to be because there now are 9. The 10th one, the last one, comes out March 1, so that's right around the corner, and it's called Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story. And I mean it when I say the rest of the story because I'm now completing and summarizing 33 years of work with nearly 4,000 adult and child experiencers. And I'm also bringing forward work I did before I died. I, too, am a near-death experiencer. I died three times, 3 months, 1977. I look back at it, and I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect. But before that happened, I was researching transformations of consciousness, altered states, psychism, mysticism, and all that kind of stuff for over a decade with nearly 3,000 people. So I put it all together, what I was doing before, what I did after. So it's a total of 43 years, nearly 7,000 people. And just, how do I put this into words? I finally gave myself permission to say what I never dared to say before, which is a whole lot. If you're a researcher, you have to be careful of, you know, what you say, your peer group, so forth and so on. You know, I'm a real researcher. I'm not some kind of channeler, or I'm not someone out there having a personal experience they want to talk about. You know, those are great. I honor them all, but my job was research. So, and I have a protocol. Stick with it. So, you know, that's my background. But while I was researching near-death kids, for instance, I began to notice that they were, gee, the new kids being born or the children being born were just like near-death kids. And so I was saying to myself, now, wait a minute here. Whoa, team.
Now, what do you mean by that for people who don't understand that?
Well, they're unusually intelligent, very sensitive, very knowing. They see ghosts. They're, you know, they're multi-channelers who live in a multiverse. They're just different. They no longer fit the normal criteria or understanding that we have for children. They're different. And I began to notice that these kids are alike, and so I began to research what I call the new kids, anyone born since about 1980. And I have 2 books out on that, The New Children and Near-Death Experiences and Beyond the Indigo Children. I'm now writing the 3rd in that group, and it will finish it off, the sequel to Beyond the Indigo Children. So now that I'm through with near-death and transformations of consciousness, I'm moving into where we are going as a species. So we're talking about evolution. We're talking about our children. We're really talking about us. So when we're talking about near death, we're talking about what is life, really. Not just death, but what is life, who we are as human beings. And when we're talking about evolution, then we're talking about how we are moving as a species, how our bodies are changing, our minds are changing, where we're going in our own climb, in our own expansion. You know, there's a lot of mutations occurring. There's a lot of differences occurring. Our water's not the same. Our soil's not the same. Our food's not the same. The vibrations in the world are not the same. We have a lot of incoherent energy now. So I just think it's time we all wake up. And my job, as I see it, is to give people a context, give them perspective, give them a framework on which they can hang all the ideas. You know, we've got all these ideas floating around, and we don't know what to do with them. I think this is why you call me tonight. Is let's begin the process of putting some of this together, at least with our children, because, you know, you just can't have ideas floating willy-nilly, because then you don't know what to do with them. But if you've got a framework on which you can hang these ideas, then you've got context, and then you can do something with it. And I would, you know, it just seems to me like with the new kids, the biggest bugaboos are the internet and sex, right there. The internet and sex. Everything else seems to spring from that. Then we're talking about addiction, and then we're talking about drugs and, you know, all kinds of things. But you know, what we're really talking about, to begin with at least, the biggest problems are sex and the internet. So I'd like to tackle sex right now, mainly because nobody else wants to tackle it. You know, that little three-letter word is still, you know, who wants to talk about it, especially where kids are concerned? Well, we've got to. Look, one out of every six boys in the United States today is sexually abused. One out of every four girls in the United States today is sexually abused. So this is huge.
I want to say something here if I can.
Yeah, please do.
I read some statistic not too long ago that 75% of our junior and high school students have a sexually transmitted disease. And it's the one that, you know, all the girls are getting, I'm not going to say the name, but all the kids are getting that drug to keep them from getting cervical cancer.
Well, oh, yeah, I
don't want to say the name, but
yeah, I would not use
it's
that.
It's a vaccination. But I found out something the other day. I interviewed this woman. I can't even remember who it was at the moment. But within the last month, or a man, I can't remember, a doctor, and they said, if your child has this sexually transmitted disease and you give them folic acid, it's a virus, and it will inhibit the virus from being able to replicate.
So
I thought that was a very important thing for people.
Folic acid is important anyway.
Yes.
Everybody needs to have that. But I hadn't heard that in regards to the sexually transmitted diseases.
That's what this physician said. And I said, well, what's the dosage? And they said, and by the way, for the listeners, we're not medical doctors here. We're just passing along information that he said, or whoever it was said, just take the recommended dosage every day, or you can even take twice that this doesn't have any kind of bad side effects or contraindications. So that would
Well, for the listening audience, they can take this advice and they can do their own search.
Yes.
And then find the data that would substantiate this. But that would be a very simple thing to do.
It's probably hard to find because it's new information, but some in my internet archives are not all labeled because somebody hacked into our site and messed it up. I'm working on that, but it's somebody that I've done within the last 2 months, a medical doctor.
Wow.
So if you went back through the last 2 months of my archive and listened to find the ones that are medical doctors that will be on there, and I just can't remember who it was. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Good news. Well, I think another thing we need to face is how children are almost being forced to be sexual. Let's see, what is that kids' clothing stores at Lords and Taylor? Anyway, this the clothing store that specializes in teenage clothing, the music they play is very loud. That is the kind of music that is scientifically proven to make you more sexual.
That's right.
So
same
you
with
walk
video games too, you know.
Yeah. So it pulls you right in because they're being fed all this sex, and of course the ads that they have in various magazines and billboards and what have you, highly sexual. They've been criticized for this a lot, but they stick with it. It's legal, so they're doing it. But the kids are being fed this all the time, on television, news, movies, what have you. And by the time a child is 10, and sometimes even earlier than that, maybe 6, they know more about sex than their parents. They're getting it everywhere. And one of the things that has become a major issue is because they're being almost force-fed sex, 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 children today, and when I say children today, I'm going to be talking more about junior high and high schoolers, now regard oral sex as like a handshake or a kiss goodbye, you know, oral sex. Well, because oral sex is now so accepted in the teenage community, oral cancer rates in the teenage community are now skyrocketing.
Really?
They are skyrocketing.
What kind of cancer is it?
Oral cancer.
I mean, like a metastasis?
In the mouth, I don't know. You know, just where in the mouth, but probably anywhere in the mouth and throat.
Is it like a metastatic kind of cancer? Or?
I couldn't answer that. I'm
oh,
not a
amazing.
Doctor.
Or I wonder if it's that same one that the vaginal one that the girls are getting the vaccination for. I wonder if it's that.
I don't know. You'd have to Google that one, too, to get the absolute stats on it. All I'm doing is waving a red flag here and saying, wait a minute, what are your kids doing when they go to the bathroom in grade school? What's happening when they go to the bathroom in junior high, in high school? This problem is huge, and it's not getting any less so until we start sitting down with our kids and talking and bringing it up to the point where the kids are willing to talk. Kids are not going to go to parents like you, Eva, and say, they're having oral sex in school and it scares me. They're not going to tell you this. Unless we have an open door policy in our homes. One of the things I did with my kids, I don't know if it'll make a difference with anybody else, but I like to think it would. We had town hall meetings. We had town hall meetings once a week, certainly once a month, but sometimes once a week. In the evenings after we'd eaten dinner, we'd all sit around the table, and we'd laugh and we'd sing, and we would have what we call town hall meetings. And we'd just go around the table. How was it for you this week? What happened? Any problems? Anybody you want to yell at? Anybody you want to scream at? Any complaints? Any happiness? Any joy? Did you learn any great jokes? What'd you see? Anything that made you uncomfortable? Anything that made you real comfortable? You know, that kind of thing. And we just keep going and going. And we'd always have some kind of little fun drink like juice and, you know, that kind of stuff. And maybe something to play with our fingers, maybe marbles or something. We'd have this town hall meeting that was very open, very loose, very easy. And because it was, the kids would talk.
I think that's a fabulous idea. I should know it would come from a woman like you.
Well, it was an open format. You know, it wasn't mom and dad being dictators.
So let me ask you this, too, because I'm sitting here staring at your webpage, and the thing that I can see without my glasses for some reason that says, it's just four words, spiritual or religious experience. So one thing that I found out with kids, especially since my daughter's had this problem, talking to her therapist, and she's had a bunch of them. Her therapist, none of them knew anything about kids being spiritually conscious.
Oh.
And when I would say that, they'd go, what are you talking about?
You're kidding.
And this one therapist said, you know what? Because I said it makes them feel different. They feel like they don't fit in. People don't understand them. They're ultra sensitive to other people's energies. They feel other people's emotions, and they get depressed. They'll be fine one instant, the next minute they're depressed, and they have no idea why. And it's because they're feeling the person next to them. And I said that to this one therapist. She goes, "Oh my God." She went home that night and talked to her kid. I mean, she didn't really say anything to me that day, but she went home that night and talked to her kid and called me back that night and said, "Would you talk to my kid?" He said, "Yes, Mom, that's me." And she knew she was having problems with his reading and his comprehension and some other things because he was so upset on the inside because nobody knew how he felt.
Right. Right now, everybody write down the name of this book, The Secret Spiritual Life of or World. It's World or Life. I think it's Life. The Secret Spiritual Life of Children by Dr. Tobin Hart. Tobin, T-O-B-I-N, Hart, H-A-R-T, Dr. Tobin Hart. The Secret Spiritual Life of Children. It's either Life or World. Get that book. It is the best book on that subject ever written in the world today. It is so good that it is a must even for adults to read for themselves. It is simple. It has solutions. It has things you can do. It is so great that I can't praise that book enough. Let me give you another book. These are for kids who see ghosts or disincarnates, and most kids do. It's called Kids Who See Ghosts. That's the name of it. How to Guide Them Through Fear. That's a secondary name. It is by Dr. Karen Good. Let me spell Karen because she doesn't spell it like you and I spell Karen. It's a C instead of a K. C-A-R-O-N. That's how she spells Karen. Good, G-O-O-D-E. Just came out last year from Red Wheel. So it's newly out. It is outstanding. Kids Who See Ghosts, How to Guide Them Through the Fear.
And I got to say, people don't think that your kid or your grandkid, because I know a lot of my listeners are my age, you know, middle age, don't think that your kids don't have this going on because the kids today are different.
Oh, they are.
And they're not going to tell anybody because they don't think anybody understands.
Well, no, they're not, unless, you know, you have a more open format where they can talk. Look, most of the kids today, well, I can't say most. I'll say a lot of the children today prefer night school to day school. Now, that's literal. Night school. I'm not talking about dreaming. I'm not talking about sleeping. I'm talking about night school. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. It was a couple of years ago. I was in a shopping mall, and I was by myself. I was walking along one of these halls, big corridors, and there was a woman to my right. She had a boy, oh, I guess maybe 6. And way, way, way down the corridor was, it looked like a mom and dad and another boy, maybe about the same age, maybe 7, 6, 7, in that area. The boy next to me recognizes and yells to the boy way down the corridor, calls him by name, goes running over to him. The other boy calls this one also by name, and I'm there listening to these boys talking about their classes last night and the assignment they were given for today and, you know, what they did for the assignment, and they were so excited they got this assignment from their teacher. Well, the coup de grace is that the mom and dad and the boy down the corridor were tourists. They'd never been through that town before. They were just passing through. There was no way their boy could have known the boy next to me.
Oh, I just got what you were saying. It just clicked. Just got it.
When they supposedly sleep at night or dream at night, many of the children are actually going to school. You can call it an astral school. I don't care what kind of school you call it. They're going to school. They're taking classes, and they're getting assignments. And they have all kinds of beings and critters and kids in their classes. They're not all human.
That's amazing. It just finally clicked what you were saying.
Yeah,
I was expecting you to say they were all there at the mall because somebody was having a night school there because of, I don't know, whatever reason.
No, I thought it was just another form of dreaming or a different kind of dreaming until I was in the mall. And then I realized, whoops.
That is amazing.
There's something else going on here. This probably explains why children prefer synthetic worlds to real ones. So when we're talking about synthetic worlds, we're talking about video games, we're talking about the internet, we're talking about all of these electronic gadgets and gadgets. And the kids prefer synthetic worlds to real worlds, and especially video games. Did you know that today, these are fresh news stats that I got on the radio yesterday, and the stat is 1 out of 4 children today are addicted to video games.
Oh, I know that. I won't let my little boy plays them. I mean, how do you stop them, you know? But I won't let him play the sound. Because, you know, the sound is one of the things that makes it so addictive. Those cadences and those noises that they make and those frequencies and the binaural beats that they use. I won't let them put the sound on it.
Yeah, you know, we can talk about Facebook, we can talk about social networking and all this stuff that is addictive to parents and adults as well as to children. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. But if we let it overtake us, if we fill our lives with too much of it, then it becomes detrimental. And what we're facing now with the children, of our new children, of the kids today, so we're talking about kids today in their 20s, because I'm going to use the year about 1980, 1981, 1982, so those kids after that, it could apply to people before then, of course, but specifically, I'm using those years because that's the time when I see the floodgate opening up of this very different kind of patterning of children coming in. And, you know, this is where I believe we're all going in because the human species is taking a quantum leap. Let's face it.
You know,
we're moving up. So if we're going to look at those kids, their number one talent, their best, biggest gift is the ability to abstract. Now, a lot of parents and experts think that that's wisdom. No, it's not wisdom. It's the ability to abstract. These kids not only think outside the box, they never even knew a box was there to begin with. So how to explain abstraction? Let me give you an example.
I think you just did when you said they didn't know the box existed.
They never knew the box was there to begin with. Let's do this 2.5-year-old Michaela, and she's having a talk with her mom, and she gets really mad, and she puts her hands on her hips, and she sashays up to her mom. She wiggles a finger in front of her mom's nose. And she says to her mom, "I don't know the word for that yet." See, she's conversing with her mom. She wants to say something. She can't because she doesn't know the word for that yet. So she goes up and tells her mother, I don't know the word for that yet. How does a 2.5-year-old know that they don't know the word for something? Stop and think about
that's
that.
Amazing.
Well, you know, well, we've got children now who are jumping. This is what near-deaf kids do. I've had a lot of experience now with abstractions, kids who can abstract. Most adults can't abstract till they're in college or maybe 30, 40 years old. These are children being born with the ability to abstract. Let me give you another example of an abstraction, only this time with a near-deaf kid. This boy is in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia area. He's 6 years old, first grade, died about halfway through in a drowning. They brought him back to life, finally able to get back in school. Okay, now, we're setting the stage here. First grade, Atlanta, Georgia. See Spot Run. Dick and Jane. Okay, you with me? First grade. This boy comes back after his near-death experience, and he is reading Greek mythology.
No way.
He goes up to his teacher, and he says to her, why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written? Now, do you hear the mind?
Yeah.
A very different kind of mind. This is not wisdom. This is not necessarily a high IQ, although they have them. This is the ability to abstract. They suddenly get all kinds of information coming in all kinds of different directions. And 9 chances out of 10, they have no idea where their ideas pop in from. It just pops in. They just look at something. They can see right through it. They know how it fits. They know what it is. And this is the ability to abstract or see through things and know. And they're always ahead of us. In school, learns, they call it concrete learning. Okay, in school you learn step by step by step. And the grades, you know, you get a little more each grade, a little more each grade, step by step by step. That's concrete learning. Abstractions go 360 degrees, everything instantaneous all at once.
Do these kids have difficulty learning what the school calls learning disability?
Well, sure, because our children today are 80% visual spatial. Our school curriculums are based on 80% verbal. They're not verbal. They're visual spatial. Let me give you another book. Got to get this book, everybody. Upside Down Brilliance, The Visual Spatial Learner by Linda Silverman. She's an expert on giftedness.
Right.
The new kids are visual spatials. And they're bored in school. Okay, the point of all of this, talking about abstraction, is a study that was done in England, I think it's about 2 years ago now. And they found that by the age of puberty, the kids in school, 50% of them had lost the ability to abstract. Now, this is their greatest gift, the ability to abstract. What in England they found that, so what's puberty? 12, 11, right in there is puberty. By that age, 50% of them had lost the ability to abstract. And so they did another study to find out why. why, you know, why are they losing this? This is their greatest gift. Why are they losing it? Can you think what the culprit is? You want to give a guess as to what the culprit is? Why were the children losing the ability to abstract?
I could guess a million things, so just tell me.
It's virtual realities. Stop and think.
You mean?
Our children today view the world through a screen.
Oh, okay, I didn't know. My little boy said something to me one time, PMH. He said, Mom, I see the world as dots.
Yeah.
And nobody understood what he was talking about because he's 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we were standing in the kitchen. This was a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. We were standing in the kitchen one day, and the TV was on. Somebody had hit it off channel on the cable, and you know how that buzzy
mm-hmm.
screen comes up? But if
yeah,
you get real close, you can see all the dots of different colors. And he said, come here, Mom, look at this. And we got real close. He said, that's how I see the world, Mom. You see those dots on there? Everything is made up of those dots.
Right.
I didn't know if you were talking about or computers.
Well, same thing. Any kind of virtual reality. Okay, look at all the things that have a screen. We've got a cell phone. We've got a computer. We've got a TV set. We've got an iPad. We've got an iPhone. We've got a Droid. How many things have a screen?
He sees that, though, without the screen, PMH. Which means
yeah.
other kids must see it that way, too, which would cause learning disabilities.
Well, it could.
Colorblind.
It could. It could. So let me finish the point
it's from
here.
From the school's perspective, anyway.
Well, let me finish the point here. Okay, this is the first group of kids in history that has seen the world through a screen. So they're really hooked on virtual realities. There's really nothing wrong with that, except that our children are getting too much too soon. The brain is not made that way. The brain is made to learn and grow through doing things. The child has to physically do things. Move the body, move the hand, make things, experiment, fall down the stairs. I mean, you know, they do
yes,
things.
That's right.
But if you're just viewing the world through a screen, you're not doing anything. So it's putting brain development in crisis. Yes, it helps you to be a multitasker. Yes, it helps you deal with nanoseconds. Yes, it makes you a lot faster in getting information. What we're losing is the ability to reason, the ability to communicate, the ability to verbalize. We're losing language. We're losing facial.
Losing experience. You don't ever know how to, you don't touch the eye and burn the finger.
Right. And
I've never thought about that. That's amazing.
Right. And we're losing the faces because children are growing up without being able to recognize emotion on people's faces physically. They can see it on the screen, but they don't see it or feel it physically. So they're growing up without that sense of pleasure. That they don't know what pleases them. All they know is what they've got from the screen. Now, let's back up for a minute, because I'm not against any of this. What I'm noticing, what everybody else is noticing, is they're getting too much too soon. So therefore, let's begin with first grade on up. Well, actually kindergarten on up, because they're starting now to teach kids how to use computers in kindergarten. So let's begin with kindergarten on up. Let's have this in steps. So the kid, when they're really young, maybe get an hour a day. When they get a little bit older, then a couple of hours a day. And so forth and so on. Until puberty. Puberty seems to be the cutoff point. So that if you can sort of ration it, up until puberty. So we're basically talking 11, 12 years old. Then after that, it doesn't seem to matter that much. But up to the age of puberty, it is crucial that we ration the use of electronic gadgets and gadgets.
That's so important.
Now there's always a solution, always, always. We can bring a lot of the abstraction back, and these are the ways we can do it. Okay, here's the fail-safe. Here's the alternative that will help handle our digital worlds. Things like a pet, they're responsible for that pet. They have to take care of that pet. They have to clean out the cage, walk the dog, whatever. Chores, where they have chores to do around the house, physical chores they have to do. You know, you have the list on the ice box. I still call them ice boxes. Everybody else calls them fridge. When I was a kid, they really were ice boxes. And it was my job to empty the drip pan underneath the big, you know, cake of ice. Well, anyway, it's up to them to take care of all of this. Gardening, any form of gardening, even if it's apartment gardening, even if you're just growing sprouts underneath your sink in the kitchen, any form of gardening or dirt, any form of cooking where they have to use their hands. So let's talk in terms of maybe sugar cookies or some other kind of cookie. Where you've got a thick cookie dough, you may be making honey cookie instead of sugar cookies. And so they're taking their hands and they're actually, you know, designing the cookies with their hands, or they're using cookie cutters. Get their hands in clay. Any kind of hanging from any kind of gym equipment, what do they call them, monkey bars or something, where the kid hangs from these bars and goes from bar to bar to bar, but they're actually hanging. Their feet are not on the ground. Any kind of jumping up and down like on a trampoline. So the antidotes here for too much digitalizing is you got to get them in the dirt. You got to get them in clay. Get them into some kind of cooking, especially dough, any kind of artwork with pets and animals, any kind of chores around the house. These are things that will pull out the incoherent energy very, very quickly. Clay especially. If I'm around a child that's troubled, especially with anger or fear, I get them on a potter's wheel. Get them on a potter's wheel where they're throwing wet clay and the wheel is spinning around and they've got their hands in there, you know, and the hands are getting dirty. And, you know, stuff is flying around, and they're just having so much fun because it's so neat. That clay pulls out the anger and the fear. Any
Thank
kind
you.
Of dirt will
Great
pull it out. It'll pull it out.
Thank
so
you.
Get them in the dirt. I don't care whether they're gardening. Animals will pull it out. They'll pull it out of you. Dogs, cats, whatever. They'll pull it out of you.
That's great to know. It's very interesting. It makes a lot of sense. It grounds them, I guess.
Yeah, sure. You got to get back into the grounding stuff.
Okay, we have a few more minutes, so I want to say this one thing, and I'm going to let you go back and finish up because I don't want to. I have found a wonderful website about how to treat your children naturally for addictions and impulsive behaviors. There's new research out there that supports the fact that children, or anybody for that fact, can have addictive behaviors or impulsive behaviors because of nutritional deficiencies. There's testing available to toxic metals, A lot of people who have addictions, they have found out, are copper toxic. And you can't just offset it with zinc because you already have the deposits in your brain and in your colon where all the neurons are. So there are things that they're learning that you can do, and they're having tremendous success rates with this. One of them is called the Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org, and that's Alliance for Addiction Solutions, single addiction solutions, plural.org. If you have any questions, you can email me at my website. There is also a treatment facility called Bridging the Gap, and it's in Virginia, with a man named Stan Stokes. And he uses this treatment protocol. And I think they have something, for the people who do what they say, I think they have something like an 85 or 90% success rate. When you get these toxins out of your body and get the right nutrition and get neurotransmitters balanced and metals balanced and minerals balanced, you don't crave anymore and you just simply don't want it. And the impulsive behaviors go away with this. So bridgingthegaps.com. And Alliance for Addiction Solutions.org. If you have any questions about it, please email. And I have to say this, my little boy, the one I was telling you about, the 10-year-old PMH, he has ADHD. I mean, he bounces all over the place. It's obvious that he has it. And I refuse to give him Ritalin, even though the school has begged me. So I started him. These people, they have these conference calls. If you join the Alliance, you don't have to join it to read their website, obviously, but to join, they have conference calls. And we did a conference call, and we spent an hour on my kid with all these experts. And they said, try MSM on your son. My son's been on MSM one day. And my daughter, when I took him to visit her today, said, Mom, what have you done to Derek? He can sit still.
Oh, he's taking it orally.
Yeah. She said, Mama, he's a different kid. He's not bouncing all over the wall. And then a friend came up, after we had been there about an hour, the visits were 2 hours, a friend came up and handed him 2 Oreo cookies. And I went, no, don't give him that. Well, they did it anyway, because I didn't know how he would be. He started patting his foot. And Jessica said, Mom, do you see that foot padding? That's sugar, because she can't do high fructose sugar or refined sugar. But before, had somebody handed him 2 cookies, he would have been walking up upside down on the walls and the ceiling. You know? So whatever that is, that was one of their pieces of advice. It's already helped my kid in 5 days.
Oh, well, MSM is wonderful. Yeah, I use the cream on my knees and various parts of my body, and it's just wonderful. Yeah, I can recommend MSM to anyone.
What would it do for the brain, do you know?
No, I don't, because I've not investigated the oral part of it. I've only used the cream.
Well, he can sit still now to do those kind of tasks that you were talking about.
Wow.
Before, I couldn't, you know, he couldn't focus on doing anything. But now that gave me a great idea. So we have about 3 minutes left. Talk about
okay.
Anything you want.
Well,
say
right
where you
away.
Are, say your new book again.
Oh, the new book coming out. Near Death Experiences: The Rest of the Story. You can pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. It's coming out through Hampton Roads. I guarantee that book will be controversial. So in the book is a chapter on the new Christology, what Christ really is, and transformations of consciousness and the brain. And you're going to be very, very surprised. Don't just go by the description of the book. The publisher wrote the description. I'm really very embarrassed by that because it's nicely done. Except that the description describes my last 3 books. It doesn't describe this one. And that's where the embarrassment comes. But anyway, near-death experience is the rest of the story. And my
where
website...
Where can they find you?
PMHAtwater.com, www.pmhatwater.com, all lowercase, one word. And at the bottom of the home page is a place to sign up for my free newsletter. And believe me, those newsletters are worth reading. Different topics, and they're infrequent. Sometimes you get 2 a month, sometimes you You only get one. Sometimes you don't get any. The last one was about the shooting in Arizona from the soul, looking at it from the point of view of the soul. So it's a very different look at what happened to Representative Giffords and the shooting in Arizona. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get. But it's free, and anybody can sign up for it. Again, the kids have the power.
Thank you, PMH.
They do.
I'm so glad to reconnect. It's been a long time.
It has. We're going to have to get together more often.
I know. I'm going to have to come to Virginia is what I'm going to have to do and be up in your mountains. Nobody wants to come and visit in Atlanta, but I'd sure like to come visit in the mountains. So
yeah.
One day.
Well, bless your heart. Keep doing what you're doing. You're a rare soul.
Thank you, and so are you, my dear. And thank you for taking the time for me tonight.
Anytime.
Have a good one.
Good you
night.
Too. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.